Learn how to take your caring and giving farther with the Caring and Funding Podcast, powered by CAP America. CAP America, America's leader in cross-border philanthropy, helps corporations, foundations, wealth advisors, and individuals who wish to give internationally and with enhanced due diligence in the United States. Through its industry-leading grants management program and philanthropic advisory services, CAP America helps donors amplify their impact and ensure their gifts are made in a safe and effective manner. This Caring and Funding Podcast is dedicated to these donors and the charities they support. Our guests are leaders in their field who join us to share tips for success and stories that inspire. Our host is Ted Hart, the CEO of CAP America. After the show, you can find all our podcasts at capamerica.org, on iTunes, and now just say, "Alexa, play CAF America on TuneIn." Now, welcome the host of CAP America's Caring and Funding Podcast, Ted Hart.
Thank you so much for joining us. Our topic today is the Ukrainian refugee crisis. What should donors know and what's expected this winter? It's estimated that 7.9 million Ukrainians fled their country, and 8 million were displaced within Ukraine as a result of this war, with nearly 7,000 civilians having been killed. In recent weeks, the war in Ukraine has shifted, the Russian attacks increasing the targeted civilian infrastructure, like critical utilities that provided power, heat, and water, that makes it much more difficult for survival during winter. Millions of Ukrainians are without power, and officials in cities across Ukraine are encouraging residents to evacuate. According to Ukraine's Deputy Minister of Internal Affairs, 520 cities, towns, and villages are facing power supply problems as a direct result of these attacks, with frigid winter temperatures already upon us. Ukrainians may face the coming months without reliable heat, power, or water. Last month, I had the privilege of visiting with our charity partners in Warsaw, Poland, and we have some of those folks here with us today as experts to share with you the eye-opening information that I received just last month. Today, we've brought together three experts from our charity partners to discuss the current humanitarian crisis and the one that winter is facing. They will share with you what their organizations have done to help Ukrainians that are in need now and to prepare for the winter months ahead. And as we discuss what is being done to help Ukrainians, we also want to ask each of you to consider what part you will play in helping those who most are in need. First, it's my privilege to welcome our first speaker. The Polish Center for International Aid, PCPM, is a non-governmental organization whose mission is to provide humanitarian aid, development programs, medical relief, assistance throughout the world, while maintaining the basic principles of humanitarianism, impartiality, neutrality, and independence. I am pleased to welcome Dr. Wojciech Wilk, PCPM's CEO, to this conversation. Dr. Wilk is a team leader of PCPM's Type 1 Emergency Medical Team and supervises PCPM's aid operations in refugee crises, as well as development programs. Before leading PCPM, Dr. Wilk worked with the United Nations Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, serving in regions that were experiencing crisis or recovering from natural disasters. Dr. Wilk, thank you so much for joining us today. Can you start us off by providing us with a quick briefing on the humanitarian crisis facing Ukraine?
Well, that's a very good question. And first and foremost, thank you for having me on the panel. And many, many thanks for CAFS and the US-based donors' support, which is really instrumental in making the whole humanitarian response, especially in Eastern Europe, outside of Ukraine, happen, because we are faced with the largest crisis since the Second World War on the humanitarian phase, which is also the biggest challenge to international peace and security and the international world order that we have seen in Eastern Europe since the Second World War. And so Russia's objective was to gain all of Ukraine, Now they are really bogged down and they are not winning militarily by far. And this is why they are reverting to aspects that border on, to activities that border on war crimes, that are war crimes, but they are also border on genocide. Because what Russia has embarked on since October last this year is to target civilian infrastructure, especially power plants, electricity distribution grid, pumping stations for water, pumping stations for sewage, hospitals, all the critical infrastructure in order to, and those arrows may indicate, create a mass exodus of civilian population that has not fallen under the Russian occupation. The population of Ukraine is about 40 million. So there is still a huge potential of additional displacement in the middle of the winter. And the Russia's objective by bombarding critical infrastructure, not only the power plants, because we should remember that in Eastern Europe, the power plants also provide heating to the cities, but also other areas of critical infrastructure, is to really depopulate much of Ukraine, break the Ukraine's resolve to stand up to Russia, but also create a lot of political havoc in Europe, in European Union, and to stymie European Union's support to Ukraine. So there are multiple objectives, and unfortunately, the Russians have played the same type of war crime activity in Syria. I have seen it with my own eyes when the Russian Air Forces was bombarding hospitals and other critical infrastructure areas. Unfortunately, what is being done in Ukraine, it's on a massively, massively larger scale as compared to Syria. Well, now the winter is very much with us. In eastern Ukraine, the temperature is going to drop to well below minus 20 Fahrenheit, well below minus 30 centigrade. And those who are staying in those destroyed buildings have no way to survive. So therefore, they have to be evacuated. They have to be brought not only to safety, but to the place where they can survive the winter. Because in the destroyed areas of eastern Ukraine, they cannot survive the winter. So what the... I'll touch quickly on what we are doing in eastern Ukraine, but the priority is to support the evacuation of civilians, because especially elderly people who didn't have the means and resources to leave their homes, they now have to leave because there is no heating, no electricity, no water, no any provisions. But in the cities, the Ukrainian government is trying to create tents or shelters where people could literally warm up, because there is no heating in their homes. They could charge their phones because there is no electricity, could get some hot food and drinks because there is no way to cook inside of the houses. But they call those points the points of steadfastness. It's pretty clumsy translation into English, but it sounds pretty nice in Ukrainian. And it implies that people are steadfast in front of the Russian aggression, and they will stay put because the Putin wants them to leave their houses. The one aspect that we should remember is that the levels of the war crimes committed by Russia is incredible. I mean, I have seen many wars. I have not seen as many war crimes as we have seen in Ukraine over the last 10 months. And among them, 1.5 million Ukrainians have already been deported into Russia. And as many as 50,000 children have been separated by their parents and sent nobody knows where into Russia to be adopted by Russian families and turned into Russian subjects. I mean, that's the type of the war crimes we haven't seen in Eastern Europe since the Second World War. And, well, this is where CAF is also bringing a huge difference. And next slide, if I may. CAF with us is helping to some of those lucky Ukrainian refugees who are first abducted into Russia. And now they are finding their way on their own to the border of Latvia, as you can see on the map, to get there, get the assistance, and together with CAF, we are providing them with immediate assistance on the Russian's border and then bringing them on to the safety of the European Union. That's the introduction on the situation of Ukraine that we have prepared, Mr. Hart.
Incredible, the effort that you have underway as an organization. We're all incredibly impressed. As the war in Ukraine continues, and sadly, we're looking at a one-year anniversary for this war. Ukrainian refugees have really no end in sight for when they will be able to return home and to rebuild their lives. What challenges do you see for refugees facing an attempt to integrate into Polish society in the medium and long term, since they don't know when they can go home?
Poland is blessed with a pretty strong labor market. So the main challenge that normally the refugees are facing is, which is a shortage of any means of employment, any means of livelihood. It's not very much the case here. But the refugee population, be it in Poland, be it in other countries of Eastern Europe, is not exactly as the type of refugees you may see. In Eastern Europe, such countries such as Poland, almost all of the refugees are either women and children. So the needs of women, especially women with small children, and the needs of children have to take prominence. So I'm extremely grateful to CAF who are supporting our flagship program of employing over 1,500 Ukrainian teachers in the Polish schools. And the Polish schools have taken in at least 200,000 Ukrainian children. Those Ukrainian teachers are providing a welcoming zone of safety and confidence for the Ukrainian refugee children, who sometimes come completely traumatized from the war. And I remember them back in April or May, where the kids were shaking. They were very unsure about their next weeks. Right now, I see them laughing. I see them playing. It's a completely different change. And this is where you, ladies and gentlemen, contribute and give those children not only the stability, not only the education, not only the future, but also the safety that we can give them in Poland. We don't necessarily need the Ukrainian children to all of them to be integrated into the Polish education system. Some of them really are very much eager to return home. Some, and therefore, the children are still trying to stay in their home curriculum in following education in their own language, and thanks to CAF we can do it by, among others, opening Ukrainian curriculum schools in Poland. One of them is supported by CAF in Warsaw. We obviously struggle with finding a proper space to have an Ukrainian school. It's not that we have empty school buildings in Warsaw or in other city in Poland, but we find empty spaces in office buildings and other buildings that we can rent. And as you can see, the results are quite promising. I mean, I when I see the teenagers and the kids running around laughing and behaving like normal kids, I mean, for me, this is the best appreciation of what CAF and other humanitarian partners have been supporting us. What we are concerned of is that we may see another wave of refugees. And PCPM has had a very tangible experience in running refugee transit centers in the first wave of refugees. And currently, we are operating a very large medical evacuation hub right next to the Ukrainian border, so that the persons, especially civilians who are wounded in the Russian strikes, or they are going through very difficult diseases, can be evacuated for treatment in the hospitals in the European Union. And some of them are being evacuated from the airport and from our medical evacuation hub as far as the US and Canada. So to wrap up, the priorities in Ukraine that I can see is literally to help the civilians survive this winter. This winter is a deadly winter. And people need all the types of assistance they can. So if you can spare a warm thought of anybody, spare a warm thought of those poor souls in Ukraine who need food, generators, heaters, fuel, blankets, and everything else. We hope to support, together with CAF, those points of steadfastness of whatever way we will call them, so that people could get some hot food, get some hot way to warm themselves up, charge their phones, even as they are staying put in their homes, because they do not want to leave their home areas despite of the Russians' bombardment. But for some of them, there will be no way of staying home, and they need to be evacuated to the safe areas. We already are starting to see the first stages of the new exodus from Ukraine. If the public services in a city such as Kiev, 3 million, in a city such as Dnipro or Odessa or several, there are several country cities around 1 million in Ukraine. If the public services in those places should break down, that is going to generate a very significant wave of refugees. I mean, UNHCR is estimating that the new wave of refugees into Poland may be about 800,000. I personally believe it may well be between 2 and 3 million, compared to about 2 million by in February and March this year. So we are definitely not out of the woods. We have all the contingency plans set up, but you know, Poland and this part of Europe, we are pretty much already saturated with refugees.
Polish Humanitarian Action is a humanitarian nonprofit organization based in Warsaw, Poland. For almost 30 years, they have delivered humanitarian aid to people around the world who are suffering due to armed conflicts and natural disasters. They offer a variety of programming around disaster relief, water and food services, shelter, and education. Our speaker from PA is Bieta Dolnicka. And Bieta supervises aid activities and program implementation in Ukraine and Poland. She has worked in the humanitarian and development sector for more than 10 years with a focus on access and quality of education, access to water and sanitation services, food and livelihood. And welcome, Bieta. Obviously, you are right in the middle of the most difficult time for many of these refugees. And we know that that you're conducting work in Ukraine and that you serve the refugee populations in Poland. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience providing aid in each of these areas? And what are the types of aid that you're delivering and what are the needs of these people?
As you said, like we're working both in Poland and Ukraine. The current response, and in Ukraine, we have been there already since 2014, so since the first war that started already before it. And currently, we expanded our presence and activities basically across the country, as you can see from the map. And in terms of locations, Kiev, Dnipro, Kharkiv, Kramatorsk, everywhere basically by the front line as well, we are working there quite a lot, either directly by ourselves or with lots of partners on the ground. So we need to underline that the amount of work also that the local organization, national organizations are putting into the response to basically voluntary response as well to their in the country, it's huge, and we're supporting them and giving them the tools and products to basically do the work that is needed. So since the beginning basically of the current war, we focus on delivering food products. So initially, because of the market was quite disrupted, we started moving everything from Poland. So we have 123,677 people that we reached with food kits. And since there was no access to shops and anything was not available in the market, then we were able to at least deliver some foods directly to them. We were able to support them, the families, with this hygiene products, about 45,000 people. And one of the biggest kind of approach to support is basic needs support through cash response. This is a general kind of most common type of assistance in many of the conflict areas. As well as we are continuing to support actually with shelters, so any type of either reconstruction of the houses or also establishing the container houses, so people at least have some place to be for the winter time. And we're putting also a big focus on the mental health support, so focusing on children, elderly, and adults. And this is across the country basically for the whole population. Some type of psychological support is psychological first aid is the key focus. In Poland itself, what we have been doing since the beginning basically of the conflict, as it was mentioned and some of the discussions, that about 8 million people actually passed through Polish border itself. There was initially eight crossing borders between Ukraine and Poland, and Polish Humanitarian Action was present at four of them, in Hreben, Zoshin, Dorohusk, Przemysl. As PH, were there with basic kind of support, as hot meals for people that were waiting for 20, 30 hours sometimes at the border site. any blankets, any changing rooms for the hygiene products for the children and women. Currently, also we expanded a lot of activities that that's in Poland, supporting 36 locations across the country with mental health support for children. We have launched a big component of actually basic needs support with cash. So that's one of the main kind of and best responses that is recommended and was recommended in Poland. So people are able actually to use the funds to cover their own needs, whatever they need. Currently, like the big focus is also on securing the accommodation. A lot of people still are staying in more collective centers or common centers. Some people obviously that had some family linkages or also are able to rent some apartments, then they do it themselves. But a lot of people still don't have this possibility. In terms of job placements, as Dr. Bick said, the job market is quite okay in Poland, but so for the basic kind of labor, it is possible for people to find jobs, but we're looking into more adjusting how people can find the jobs within their kind of area of work as well, so they can, because that's also connected to the scale of the salary that they can earn and to be able actually to sustain themselves a bit more. In Poland itself, we're looking at access to accommodation to be able to move from more collective centers to more individual housing, more integration within education system, integration within job market, as I mentioned as well, placement for more specialized professionals, and to some extent continuous cash support for basic needs, especially for rent, for any kind of increased cost of energy and heating, especially for the new families and new people that may be arriving in this winter time. In terms of challenges, we have healthcare, education, employment, financial assistance that is available for Ukrainian citizens in Poland, and it was open since the beginning of the conflict. But we can see that the system right now is a bit overwhelmed. Also, as within, like I said, a few months, we have 1.5 million people. So sometimes the services for some of these components are quite slow. And integration with social protection system still is in the process, and that will probably take some time as well. And obviously, I mean, we get lots of different individuals and the donors that are supporting our activities. But we know that this is a wave of let's help right now, but what's going to happen later?
It's incredible the work that PAH is doing. And can you help our donors who, you know, want to support but also need to answer questions to people who, you know, what is the impact? Why does it really matter that they give again? What's happening now that is the urgency for donors to maybe consider giving again?
As an organization, we are focusing on making sure that, yes, we help right here, right now with basic food, with basic access to what people need right here, right now. But we have in mind already, like the next steps, how we can make it more sustainable, how we can make sure that people don't rely only on social system, don't rely only on our support. So this is whether in Poland or in Ukraine, that's the main focus. I mean, connecting people to the job market, making sure that they basically come into this to the workforce system and they don't rely so much on the social system and any kind of other organizational support.
Thank you very much. And People in Need is a Czech nonprofit, non-governmental organization that provides emergency relief to people around the world during natural disasters or major crises, as well as delivering long-term aid to people living in poverty. In addition to humanitarian aid, People in Need implements development programs, education, and social integration programs, and provides human rights support in areas of need. We're joined today by Erica Dvoraka, who is the People in Need's country program coordinator for Ukraine. She coordinates the implementation teams that provide much-needed humanitarian assistance in the areas of shelter, and winterization, which is the topic that we have today, cash assistance, partnership, and localization, education, and much more. So, Erica, thank you for taking the time to speak with us today. And I know our audience is going to be keenly interested to know more about your work. Can you tell us about the type of aid that People in Need has successfully delivered to people who have remained in the Ukraine? And what has your experience in providing relief been so far?
Thank you so much, Ted, for the introduction and also for the opportunity to be here in this panel and to share our experiences and the support that we are providing to the Ukrainian people. People in Need in Ukraine has been present in Ukraine since 2003, and we have started providing the humanitarian aid to the vulnerable people after the 2014 with the first Russian aggression. And of course, we have scaled up our activities this year tremendously. And currently we are present in 17 regions, but over the last few months, we have been present in all 24 regions across Ukraine, providing support through our local staff. We have more than 290 staff currently on the ground. We have been able up till now to cover more than 500,000 people in Ukraine with the emergency support that was really needed. As the invasion has started on the 24th of February, People in Need has been already able to provide large cargoes of humanitarian aid, provided this humanitarian aid through trains and trucks from the Czech Republic that was imported to Ukraine. But what is also important in this humanitarian crisis is to be flexible and to look into the needs of the local market. From the beneficiaries that we are serving, from the people that we have identified as the most vulnerable, we are targeting households, individuals, but as well as collective centers. So collective centers that are hosting the internally displaced people that do not have any place where to stay, or they couldn't stay in their regions. So People in Need is supporting these collective centers with the in-kind assistance, material assistance, as well as cash assistance, which is basically making the people, giving people the possibility to use the cash openly, and they, because they are the ones who know what they really need and what is the need for them to buy. As we have mentioned, the winter is already here, it's already in Ukraine. And so what are the needs? How we are covering the needs for the winter. We are providing people with the winterization items, clothes, heating stoves. So right now we are repairing 9,000 houses, nurseries, and other buildings. Another point, how we are helping to provide for the winterization needs is we are providing emergency shelter kits. So this is very important that the most people can access and can have some kind of shelter improvement.
I'd like to thank everybody for the opportunity to have you with us here today. The information that you've provided has helped us gain a more nuanced understanding of the current state of humanitarian response in Ukraine and the surrounding countries. Before we wrap up today, I'd like to ask a final question and have each of you respond specifically to the donors that work with CAF America and are interested in helping those that are most in need because of this conflict. So speaking to those donors, what is the most important thing for the international community to understand about the crisis at this moment? Let's start with you, Erica, and then we'll go to Beata and then Dr. Wilk.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for this question. So I think what is really important to know is that this conflict now has been ongoing for 9 months, and it will still be ongoing. So it's not something that that will end right now, and the needs of the people will continue even further.
Thank you. Beata, over to you. What's the most important thing for the international community to understand about this crisis right now?
Yes, I mean, I have the same opinion as Erika, that for sure, I mean, we were all hoping in the beginning that it will end soon, but it's clear now that it will continue for quite some time, and the needs will be there for years to come. And I mean, we may be tired because we're helping extra and volunteering extra, but this is, at the end, we go back home and we can sleep in a warm house and we're fine, yeah? But these families will still need lots of support for years to come. And the approach should be, and we have this approach, that we want to make it as the help that we give, we want to make it as sustainable as possible so people can help themselves. And we see that there is this willingness of people actually to do the job. It's not that they're waiting for handouts and all of this. They are ready to do the work.
And Dr. Wilk, speaking specifically to the international community, what do you want them to understand about this crisis right now?
This is a fight of an autocracy that has breached all the tenets of the international law, has launched a war of territorial conquest, has done tremendous amount of war crimes and crimes that are now bordering on genocide. And all the baddies of the world are watching. Iran is watching. China is watching. Others are watching. Because if Putin manages to win over Ukraine, and even importantly, win over Ukraine because the West will falter, the whole domino effect is going to start. In case of Czechia, in case of Poland, those countries are considered, you know, developed countries, but we still don't have the means, the financial means, to respond to such high, huge refugee crisis. So the traditional funding mechanisms focus on Ukraine, and rightly so, yet your support in places like Latvia, like Poland, like Czechia, is really making a massive, massive difference.
I'm going to stay with you, Dr. Wilk, and then we'll go back around one final question before we wrap up today. What lies ahead, and why do donors need to be engaged now so that there is a future for Ukraine?
Well, donors have to be engaged because the Putin is exactly counting on the Western societies to get bored, to get tired, to wanting to go to back to the business as usual. We have managed to do something that nobody expected, all of us together. And now we have to persevere. Winter is going to be a critical time. We all hope that spring and summer is going to bring some hope. But indeed, well, that Ukrainians are fighting for their freedom, but they're also fighting for the global peace and stability that is really a threat. And at the end of the day, if this falls, everybody's going to suffer.
Thank you, Beata. Over to you. What's at stake here for donors to stay engaged?
I think we can already see like the effect that actually the war in Ukraine had on the rest of the world. We see how much it affected a lot of food deliveries or food supplies in different parts of the world. So this also has been disrupted. So it's not only conflict in Ukraine and affecting only Ukraine and even neighboring countries. It's affected the price increase all over Europe, all over the world, and it will have lots of consequences for years to come for the whole world. So I think it's super important to have this commitment still and cooperation on trying to address the current needs and rebuilding the country to also rebuild a bit of a balance in different parts of the world that we never thought that actually it's connected so much. Yeah.
Thank you, Beata. And final word over to you, Erica. What's at stake here for donors to stay engaged?
For the donors, it is important also to understand what the Ukrainians are coming through currently, and not only in Ukraine, but also in the other countries. So this the support that is given to Ukraine is giving the hope this will and the power to go through. So I think this is very important also as a sign for the overall society.
Thank you so much. And thank you to everyone who's joining us today. On behalf of CAF America, we want to thank you so much for your support of the Ukrainian refugees and urge you to stay connected. As our speakers have shared with you today, they're on the ground making a difference. And so we want to thank you for joining us and for everything that you might do to help Ukrainian refugees.
You've been listening to the Caring and Funding Podcast powered by CAF America. Tell all your friends and colleagues to check out our archives, sign up for our free newsletter, and download our iPad and iPod-friendly podcasts at cafamerica.org. Thanks for listening to the Caring and Funding Podcast.